All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm giving you my thoughts on what I saw from the all 22 of the Falcons week 6 win over the Minnesota Vikings, as well as answering your listener questions.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Falcons is presented by Pepsi, made for football watching. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly on FalcFans.com, RIP, currently still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, hosting this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's episode is a Film Friday Q&A episode where I will be answering the bulk of today's podcast, answering your listener questions. We have some great questions from you guys, including Todd Bowles' ability as a head coaching candidate, Hayden Hurst, and reviewing sort of the tight ends so far this season, reviewing the Falcons 2020 draft class so far this season, the possibility of trading Alex Mack, switching defensive schemes to a 3-4, and what that would entail if that leads to improvements in the future. But, you know, we'll sort of kick things off with sort of giving my assessment of one particular play against the Vikings, watching the all 22 that really stood out to me, and wondering, you know, are the Falcons more lucky than good when it came to that Vikings game? And sort of that's where we'll jump in today's Locked On Falcons Film Friday episode. So after watching the all 22 from the Falcons 40-23 week 6 win over the Vikings, I do have some concerns for the Falcons moving forward. Generally, it was an impressive performance, but I think there are some concerns and things that they need to clean up. Obviously, you're not going to necessarily fix all your problems in 1 week under an interim head coach, but I would certainly say that Raheem Morris has the team on the right path during his first week on the job, and it will be worth watching to see if he can continue them down that path. But one example that does concern me is whether or not the Falcons still have a flawed process, which stems from my reaction watching the film of that 40-yard touchdown to Julio Jones in the third quarter. That was the play where Matt Ryan was able to extend the play outside the pocket, then lob up a pass to Jones, who was able to sprint down the field after the catch for a big score, putting the Falcons up at that point 30-7, which was a very good response to what the previous drive was, which was the Vikings' first score of the game. And that was an important score for the Falcons, because we know that this Falcon team has been prone to letting other teams get back into football games, and going forward on a 4th-and-3 at the Vikings 40-yard line was, relatively speaking, a risky decision. If they had failed there, the Vikings would have gotten the ball back with prime field position, and potentially if they had managed to score a touchdown on that ensuing drive, at that point the game would have been potentially 23-14 or 15, cutting a 2-score lead that the Falcons had at that point going into that fourth down play, potentially to a 1-score lead with a full quarter left to play in the game. So the fact that the Falcons were able to get that score from Jones kept the game at 3 scores and basically wound up proving an insurmountable lead for the Vikings at that point in the game. So I look at that result of that play, and it was a huge one for the Falcons, but I was a tad bit concerned about the process after rewatching the film of that play. Why? Well, because in that play in particular, while Ryan showed great moxie extending the play, frankly, he didn't really need to. And the Falcons on that particular play lined up in shotgun, and Ryan, when he hit his back foot on his dropback, Jones was wide open. 2 yards beyond the sticks on that 4th-and-3 with a Vikings defender, rookie corner Jeff Gladney, 2 yards off of him. Ryan hits his back foot, drives on that throw. It's an easy completion, easy conversion. It's a relatively clean pocket on that play, a wide open window, but for some reason, Matt Ryan hesitates to pull the trigger. Then he steps up as if he's going to run for the first down, and Jones turns around and starts blocking Gladney with the same impression. Then a Vikings defender, in this case linebacker Eric Kendricks, starts to close on Matt Ryan just before he's about to cross the line of scrimmage, Matt Ryan hits the brakes and then lobs up a throw to Jones, who at that point in the play, when Ryan made the decision to make that throw, was blanketed by Gladney. It's basically a desperation throw at that point, asking his best receiver to essentially go make a play. Jones, of course, does that. Gladney slips trying to backpedal while covering Jones, leaving Julio wide open. And he makes a grab, and then it's a sprint to the end zone. Vikings linebacker Eric Wilson does wind up catching Jones from behind, but Jones delivers a vicious stiff arm, is able to avoid being pushed out of bounds by Wilson at the 12-yard line, and finishes the rest of the 12 yards for the score. So when you break it down piece by piece, it's kind of a fluky play. Now, had it been executed the way it was drawn up, it would have been a simple 5-yard completion, move the sticks, rather than a 40-yard touchdown. And who knows if, after a simple conversion like that, whether or not the Falcons continue to drive down the remaining 35 yards and get a touchdown. So you look at that play and see an incredible play by Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, and it is, but it didn't necessarily need to be. So it does beg the question, how much can the Falcons really rely on that sort of thing moving forward? And I know to many that sounds like nitpicking, and it certainly is. And, one of my favorite statements in regards to the Falcons often is beggars can't be choosers. And if to get their first win of the season, they had to get a little bit of luck on their side, especially in contrast to earlier in the season when it seemed like Lady Luck was firmly against them, one shouldn't complain. We can throw any number of idioms, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, etc. And that one play shouldn't necessarily be used to define the entirety of that Vikings game, as clearly the Falcons made a number of other plays throughout that game that weren't simply down to luck. And so at the end of the day, if that's a quote unquote lucky win, and that gives this Falcon team confidence moving forward that they're capable of playing much better than they certainly did in the first five games of this season when they were winless, who am I to complain about that? But it, at least for me, raised some questions, and I wonder if maybe this team is due for a little bit of a letdown this week when they face off against the Detroit Lions. And it's kind of reminiscent to me a little bit of coming out of that bye week last year, and they beat the brakes off of the Panthers, and everybody was like, oh, the defense is fixed. Raheem Morris has fixed the defense. And then watching the film of that, it's like you still saw many of the breakdowns in the secondary, but thanks to the pass rush getting home, that Kyle Allen wasn't able to exploit those breakdowns. And then we saw Jameis Winston when the pass rush wasn't able to get pressure on Jameis Winston that following week, and Chris Godwin just completely pick apart and decimate that secondary. So I don't think, I don't think Detroit is on that level quite yet. I hope Detroit's not on that level quite yet, but I do, it does remind me a little bit of like, okay, this was an impressive win, but at the same time, I do wonder, were they more lucky than good in this game? So that was my takeaway from that one specific play from the All 22. Not to, again, as I said, indicate that it's all bad for the Falcons in that Week 6 game, but that play in particular did kind of stand out to me because that was just kind of a fluky thing. But as we move forward in today's Locked On Falcons podcast, we're going to get into your questions, including whether or not Todd Bowles is a good prime candidate for the Falcons head coaching position. The current Bucs defensive coordinator who helped dismantle the Falcons offense in that Week 12 game that I just referred to. But when we're talking about, beating the Vikings and then beating the Lions, that's a wall, and we have to break through those walls every day, whether they be mental or physical. And helping us do that is, of course, Built Go, the best workout gel on the market, brought to you by the same folks at Built Bar that bring you the best tasting protein bar on the market. Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein, making it a fast absorbing and easy on the stomach. It's loaded with good stuff like beta alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. And collagen also promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. So it literally makes you look better. And like Built Bars, it tastes better too, as it comes in three delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. It's a healthier replacement for your energy drink or coffee because it's going to give you that same kick that you need, but it's lasting and natural and won't give you the crash feeling that you normally get. So look good, feel good, and break through your walls by visiting builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED to get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. So our first question comes from Stephen Bounds. He asked, what about Todd Bowles as the Falcons head coaching candidate? Not sure he was at fault for the Jets being bad. Maybe. I think if you're going to roll with Bowles, you're basically going for the improved version of Dan Quinn, which is the idea that you're going to hire a coach that's going to fix the defense and just kind of hope and pray that your offense is good enough. Because I think the big concern with Bowles is not necessarily his ability to coach up the defense, but his ability to choose good offensive coordinators. Chan Gailey was the offensive coordinator he chose in New York in his first 2 years. Then Gailey retired. Then he hired John Morton to replace him. I thought Morton did a pretty decent job by most people's accounts, including my own. But him and Bowles clashed because he was too pass happy. And then Bowles' replacement for him was Jeremy Bates, who was worse than Morton and being too conservative. So you have some of the same issues that you have with Dan Quinn over the ability to pick good play callers. Now, the argument for Bowles is that if he can get a defense and turn around this defense and be a top five unit within 2 years, that you have presumably Matt Ryan in this case. And because you have Matt Ryan and Julio Jones for two more years, 2021, 2022, potentially, the argument that we've used in the past when we've talked about Falcons offensive coordinator hires is the floor for your offense should be like the 12th best offense in the NFL. And maybe Bowles winds up hiring a good enough offensive coordinator that he can, you know, exceed that floor. And maybe you have the 8th best offense in the NFL and couple that with a top 5 defense. That's a team that at least on paper should be a Super Bowl competitor. But one of the big arguments against hiring a defensive minded coach is basically you're making two, relatively speaking, big bets that he's going to quickly turn around the defense and turn that into an elite unit within 2 years, and that his OC hire is not going to be a bust. And if both of those bets don't come true, you know, I don't know why hiring a defensive minded coach is a great idea. If you think beyond the short term of 2 years and, you know, of 2 years with Ryan, and then, you know, think beyond the long term of 5+ years and turning the page with a young quarterback, you're basically tying yourself to the idea that over those first couple of years with that young quarterback, your defense is going to be lights out and allow you to be highly competitive, because the odds are not in your favor that that young quarterback is going to give you high level quarterback play. So to me, it's kind of the same bet that you've made with Dan Quinn. Now, you can certainly make a relatively easy argument that, you know, being coached by Todd Bowles is going to be a better bet, at least on the defensive side of the ball, than you got with Dan Quinn. But I think you can also kind of poke holes in Todd Bowles' record as a defensive play caller, particularly if you look back at his time in New York, where, you know, 3 out of the 4 years he was there, they were like a bottom 10 defense. So it's not like it's a slam dunk that you're going to get elite defense here in Atlanta based off of his previous track record as a head coach. So our next question comes from Young Zach on Twitter. He asks, why doesn't Dirk Cutter incorporate the fancy plays you see Shanahan, Reed, Gruden, and McVay run weekly? Do you think he's just stubborn or naive? I think it's both, Zach. One who flew over the Falcons nest at Mave2124 asks, on the next All-22 review episode, can you tell us how the tight ends are playing overall looking at the game live? Their blocking looks pretty bad. Wide receiver blocking outside the top three also looks bad. You know, I think in the Vikings game in particular, the tight end blocking was pretty rough. Stocker missed a number of blocks. Hurst missed a couple of blocks. Most of those came against the Vikings defensive ends like Yannick Ngakoue and Odenigbo, or I forget his name. You know, I think Hurst's blocking the last couple of games has been slightly better than it was the first couple of weeks of the season. I think overall, when we talk about overall, not just their blocking, the tight ends have been fine. Obviously, Stocker is not a threat as a pass catcher. You know, Jaden Graham barely plays, you know, and he hasn't really been that impressive when he has played. But, you know, you look at Stocker's workload, according to Pro Football Focus, 82% of his snaps he's being asked to block. So basically, when he's in the game, 82% of the time the Falcons are running the ball or running a play action pass. Compared to Hurst, only 30% of his snaps he's asked to block. So 70% of the time when Hurst is on the field, it's going to be a passing play. So, you know, I think some of the reasons, the contributing factors to why Hurst hasn't been as consistent, is that the Falcons want him to run a lot more intermediate and vertical routes. And because Ryan doesn't have quite the rapport with him, you're not seeing this sort of anticipation throws on some of those routes. You're also, you know, the protection hasn't been super reliable. It's been improved from previous years, but it's not sort of to the level where all of those longer developing routes are coming open for Hurst. You know, I think some of it is due to the hype that came with Hurst and simply not living up to that hype due to various factors that I've pointed out in the past, such as, you know, the fact that he didn't have an offseason with Matt Ryan in this offense, the fact that he's new to this offense, and, you know, the offense isn't necessarily as tight end friendly as many prefer to claim this offseason, is one of the reasons why Hurst hasn't really hit the ground running. But going back to what I said throughout the offseason, I don't think you're expecting Hayden Hurst to have this monster year coming out of the gates. You're hoping that by the time we get to Thanksgiving, him and Ryan start to develop that rapport. And if that happens by at that point in time, that will be way faster than Matt Ryan has developed a rapport with literally any other tight end. So I even think that's being optimistic, but, you know, no one can ever accuse us on the Locked On Falcons podcast of never being optimistic in that regard. So, you know, not to dump on Hayden Hurst, but, you know, I think outside of the two tight end throwbacks that we got against Dallas and in this past week against Minnesota, his efficiency as a receiver has been pretty abysmal, at least when you look at, you know, Pro Football Focus's yards per route run metric. Outside of those two plays, he would rank like 42nd and 49th in that metric among out of 49 tight ends. You know, with those two throwbacks included, it pushes him up to 33rd. So it's still not great. You know, you compare that to what Hooper was through the first six games of last year, he was 10th in that metric. So take that for whatever it's worth. As for the wide receivers and their blocking, you know, for me, I think Zacchaeus is probably the only guy that's really sort of stood out to me as a blocker when I've watched the film. You know, I don't think you're getting great blocking from Ridley or Gage or Julio. It's serviceable. That's what I will say. I've certainly seen worse there. So Jamel at JKane86 asks, what are your thoughts of the rookie class thus far? Are there any that you feel have changed or solidified your thoughts about them since the draft? It's mostly been solidification. For the most part, they've been about what I expected them to be. I think AJ Terrell's on a nice path to be a CB1 down the road. He's been a little bit up and down so far, but I think he's certainly been a lot more consistent than either Oliver or Sheffield have been. Certainly from a technical standpoint, he's light years better than those guys. So I feel pretty good about betting on him to continue to grow and improve as things go on, with Oliver and Sheffield just kind of being all over the place technically, which is why they're so inconsistent. Marlon Davidson's been pretty mad so far. You know, obviously he's been hurt. You know, I go back to my scouting report. I think the floor for my comp for him was like Mario Edwards, when I think I mentioned in that scouting report that Edwards was an effective sort of seventh or eighth guy in your D-line rotation. And that's kind of what Davidson has been, even though I don't think he's been that effective in that role, but that's basically what he is, like the seventh or eighth best guy in the Falcons D-line rotation currently. So he's kind of hit his floor so far. You know, my big concern with Matt Hennessy was that he was going to struggle as a guard, and he struggled as a guard. Walker was a guy that I liked his junior tape better when he was playing more of a edge/Sam linebacker role, playing much more on the line of scrimmage. And I was underwhelmed with his senior tape when he was more of an off-ball linebacker. And guess what? I've liked what I've seen from him when he's been asked to be more of that Sam and play downhill and play on the line of scrimmage and attack upfield and rush the quarterback. And I've been pretty underwhelmed when he's played off-ball as a will linebacker and been asked to read, react, and cover. So he's been about the norm. Hawkins has been fine. He plays hard. You know, I know many were impressed with his performance against Green Bay. I wasn't in particular. He had a couple of nice plays in that game, several questionable ones. So he's kind of what I expected him to be if he saw extended reps. And Hop Frichter's been solid. I know Pro Football Focus grades him in the bottom third of punters in overall grade, but he's been top 10 in hang time, which I think was to be expected for him. And one of the things I noted in his scouting report was how much more effective he was with his hang time kicking indoors than he was kicking outdoors. Like I think the number was like he wound up being like 20, his hang time was like 25% better indoors than it was outdoors. So, you know, he's been playing a lot of games indoors, so he's been fine in that regard. He hasn't been booming as many kicks as you would like to see, but he's been pretty decent with his directional kicking. So I've been pretty content with the Falcons rookie class so far. So we will continue today's Locked On Falcons podcast with more questions, including whether or not trading Alex Mack makes sense for the Falcons, as well as talking about whether or not the Falcons should be looking to switch to a 3-4 scheme, possibly under a coach like Todd Bowles next year. But since we're talking about Falcons rookies, you know, you guys should probably check out the two daily draft-related podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, hosted by Trevor Sikkema and Ben Solak, as well as the Draft Dudes podcast, hosted by Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino. Subscribe to both of them on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever you're listening to me right now. So, J-Dog 3013, his name is I Drink and I Know Things. Shout out to Game of Thrones reference. He asks, are there other players the Falcons might trade before the deadline, besides Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, I was thinking maybe Alex Mack. You know, I think Mack in particular is probably the only trade that really makes sense for the Falcons and is at least quasi-realistic as a possibility, I think. I think most of the other trade proposals, particularly those that include Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, are, you know, out there. I don't see the Falcons trading Tack McKinley or anything like that. You know, maybe they could trade like Deidre Sinnott or Ito Smith for like a conditional seventh round pick or something like that. But I don't see anybody coming knocking down their door to do that. So, you know, I don't necessarily, when it comes to Alex Mack, I don't necessarily expect the value that you're going to get back from him to be as high as some people are projecting. I've seen, you know, people throw like third round pick out there as a trade back possibility. I don't necessarily see that. But then again, I didn't see anybody giving up more than a fourth round pick for Mohamed Sanu last year. And so you never know. But I think, you know, that trade in particular was more of a fluke slash outlier. So I think the issues with trading Mack are multifaceted. You know, he's an older player. And frankly, I hasn't been playing great football this year. Some of that's owed to the scheme stuff that we constantly complain about here on the Lockdown Falcons podcast. But he's a free agent after the season, and there's a decent to good chance that he's probably going to retire after the season, which basically means any team that's acquiring him is renting him for the next eight games, or eight or more games, assuming that they make the playoffs. And he plays a position that isn't necessarily a plug and play position. You know, the center spot is not something that you can just sort of, you know, plug a new guy in overnight and then expect him to hit the ground running. So it's reasonable that if you do trade for him, that you're going to have to wait a couple of games for him to get up to speed before you can really expect him to make any sort of impact that you're looking for. So in reality, you're not renting him for eight plus games. You're kind of renting him for like four, maybe five or six games, given that sort of runway time that he needs, that lead up time. So, you know, I think if you're going to make that trade, you have to really feel strongly that he's going to be the final piece that's going to push you over the hump, either to make the playoffs or to win you a Super Bowl, to make that worthwhile for you. And I don't see that many teams going out of the way to give up value for that beyond maybe a fifth or a sixth round pick. Now, I do think there's one team out there in particular that, at least in theory, it makes a lot more sense for them to pull the trigger on the Alex Mack trade, and that's the 49ers. He knows the scheme very well, so he would be a plug-and-play type of player there. They do have some issues at the center position. Ben Garland has been a solid fill-in for them for Weston Richburg, who's been a free agent bust that they signed 2 years ago. But Garland does have that guard flexibility. I know right guard has been their bigger issue moving forward, but they could potentially plug Mack in at center, move Garland to right guard, where currently Daniel Brunskill is holding down the fort. I know Brunskill's coming off a relatively solid game against the Rams, where he was impressive at times against Aaron Donald. So maybe they're more willing to say, okay, maybe Brunskill is turning a corner and maybe able to figure this thing out. So they may not be as willing to trade for Alex Mack as maybe they were a week ago. But, you know, as far as trade talk, the 49ers don't have a third round pick, so you're not getting that from them. They gave that up that already when they traded for Trent Williams. OverTheCap.com has them projected to get a fifth round pick as a comp pick for Emmanuel Sanders in next year's draft, and they also received a seventh round pick from the Jets in their trade that they made for Jordan Willis earlier this week. So I think really the best case scenario that you're probably looking at in terms of what they would be willing to trade for Alex Mack is like a fourth and a seventh, given that they have, you know, a couple of day three picks that they could throw your way. I know many would take that in a heartbeat, and I would guess that the Falcons would be willing to accept that, given the fourth round pick as valuable. But if it's not a fourth, if it's more of a fifth or a sixth, I would question if the Falcons would jump at that. You know, the problem is, you know, you do have Hennessy waiting in the wings, but you got to remember, he, as far as we know, he hasn't gotten that much practice time as a center so far this year. You know, all those days of rest that Alex Mack was getting during the summer, it was Justin McCray that was getting the starting reps at the center position, while Hennessy was still continually work at the left guard position. Now, maybe that's changed during the season where Mack has continually gotten rest. I think if not every week, most weeks, at least one day of rest, and maybe Hennessy's gotten some more reps at the center position during that time. But I think from the Falcons' perspective, and again, have to stress that the Falcons, unlike the fans, or at least many of the fans, are in the business of trying to win football games. If you feel that Hennessy is a roll of the dice as a center, given that you've only seen him for a relatively limited amount of reps, and that's a critical position on your offense, you can make the argument that beside quarterback, that center is the most valuable position in this offense. You know, if you exclude, you know, Julio Jones is the most valuable player, but we know that it's because Julio is Julio, not necessarily because of the nature of the position that he plays. So the argument is that if you take a significant step back from Alex Mack, even though he is not playing great this year, but, you know, that doesn't mean that Hennessy is automatically going to be able to fill those shoes ably, you know, is it worth it to you to make that significant step back? Is it worth the risk that it's going to really hinder your ability to win football games in the second half of the season where you already know you're facing one of the league's toughest schedules? Is that worth it to you to pick up a fifth or sixth round pick? You know, I think it would be worth it to you to pick up a fourth because that's a potential starter, but a fifth or sixth round pick, odds are pretty high that that's going to be a special teams guy at best. So is that worth it to you? You know, that's to me is a legit question. So I know what fans would think. Of course it's worth it. I don't know if the Falcons would necessarily see it. So we'll just sort of have to see. But the point is, I don't necessarily see that as a slam dunk slash no brainer that I'm sure some people would portray it as. You got to get whatever you can get for Alex Mack at this point. You got to get it because it's better than nothing. That sort of mentality. And it's like, well, not from their perspective, because, you know, it's not nothing. If they can win, you know, two or three games in the second half of the season, that's not nothing to them. I know that's nothing to a lot of fans, but that's not nothing to the Falcons. And so from their perspective, if trading Mac hinders your ability to win two or three games in the second half of the season, that's a problem. But, you know, if they go 0-2 over the next 2 weeks between now and the trade deadline, you know, I think it would make it easier for the Falcons to move on from Alex Mack, because at that point you're 1-7 and really, you know, what are you playing for? But if you're, you know, 3-5 with some momentum with three straight wins, you know, I think you would be more willing to ride it out. So we'll see how it plays out. Our last question comes from Corey Peacock at CoreyP38. Yes. Obviously, we don't know what the future is with the Falcons coaching staff, but do you think the Falcons defense would be more successful in a 3-4 defense? Jared and Marlon Davidson at the ends, draft Parsons with the first rounder and have him play outside linebacker with Dante Fowler playing opposite of him, and have Jones and Foyer as your middle linebackers. I just feel like since we have so many ends that can play inside and out, the team would be more suited for a 3-4. So I've said this before. I said this last year. I think the 3-4 versus 4-3 stuff is often very overrated. For the most part, those differences are pretty superficial. The Falcons deploy plenty of 3-4 looks versus 4-3 looks. So, you know, the idea that they would be better suited to play 3-4 is like, you know, just move one or two pieces around and it's like, boom, all of a sudden you're a 3-4 versus a 4-3. So I don't think it's that big an issue. As for, you know, drafting Parsons high and then making him a full-time edge, I don't know if I would be on board with that. I'd much rather groom him as a middle linebacker than necessarily as a full-time edge. I think he could certainly play as a full-time edge, but I think, you know, from what I've seen, he'd be more Anthony Barr than necessarily a big-time pass rusher in that regard. So I feel like you're just kind of delaying the inevitable. Obviously, the Falcons have two pretty decent options as inside linebackers in Jones and Foyer, but I just kind of think Parsons is light years better than either of those guys. So put him in the position where he can be the anchor of your defense for the next 12 to 15 years, potentially, if you wind up drafting him rather than a guy that you're going to just plug as an edge for 1 year. And then eventually when you get a better edge rusher, presumably, you know, you're going to wind up replacing him and moving Parsons to the inside. So, you know, I have more to say on the whole scheme stuff, but I'll just kind of leave it at that. We'll probably get into it more later in the season. So, you know, moving to a 3-4, cool. Staying in a 4-3, cool. I just think for the most part, the differences between those schemes, because of the hybridization that has occurred in the NFL over the last decade, is just kind of more mostly superficial. Really, the differences between schemes is really sort of what is your preferred coverage shells and sort of what do you do with your pressure concepts. And at least in theory, the 3-4 is easier to be a little bit more creative and disguise your pressures, at least traditionally. I don't think that's as big an issue today as it used to be, because there are plenty of 4-3 teams that are more than willing to dial up pressure frequently. I mean, the Vikings have a scheme that is very good at disguising pressure. They're just not a team that's known for pressuring the quarterback, but if they wanted to be, they certainly would have the capability of being so. And the Falcons have been blitzing way more this season than they have at any other point in the Dan Quinn era, in part due to the fact that they play a healthy mix of both 4-3 and 3-4, although technically they're considered a 4-3 defense. So, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like that notion of 3-4 versus 4-3, I think even making the switch, you're still looking for the same pieces. You know, I think you're still looking for a true middle linebacker. I think you're looking for an edge rusher. I think you're looking for another big body on the defensive line. And whether you're a 3-4 or 4-3, I don't think it really changes that. You're tweaking slightly what you're looking for. Like if you're a 3-4, your edge rusher might need to play a lot more in space, so you're looking for a little bit more of an athlete. While if you're a 4-3, you can look for more of a guy that's a pure hand in the dirt edge rusher, pass rusher. If you're in a 3-4 versus 4-3, maybe you're looking for more of a one technique as that big body on the interior. But, you know, maybe in another scheme, you're looking for more of a 5 technique or a 3 technique or something like that. So it's one of those things where I feel like the scheme stuff is mostly, as I said, superficial stuff. So, Corey, you know, sure. Basically, long story to say, sure. If you think the 3-4 works, I think there, you know, you can find reasons why it would be a better fit. I think Fowler, you know, would do better in that scheme than he is doing currently in the Falcons 4-3 hybrid scheme. So you can make compelling cases for, you know, these three players being better in 3-4 than they are in a 4-3. But I think you can probably also make, you know, the cases for three other players that are better in a 4-3 than in a 3-4. So long story to say, you know, I don't think it really all matters all that much. But if you want to see a 4-3-3-4 and Todd Bowles, I know, runs a 3-4, then great. Awesome. You know, whatever. not to sound dismissive, but there you guys have it. Appreciate everybody for sending in their questions. They sent in theirs on Twitter via Locked On Falcons. But of course, you can send them in via Facebook to Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com for future Q&As. And I appreciate everybody who sent in their questions. And we'll be back on Sunday evening with a rapid reaction to whatever happens in that Detroit Lions game. And until then, guys, go vote.